Welcome to the Dungeon Plunger Podcast. My name is Jason Weeb, and this is the show in which I, a real-life janitor and dungeon master, teaches you how to plunge in and run a better Dungeons & Dragons game. Without further ado, let's plunge into this week's episode. Welcome, Dungeon Plunger Union members. I have my plus one plunger. I indeed have a cup of coffee flavored holy water. And as always, a very special union member with me today to help plunge that dungeon and flush evil down the drain. This week, a man who needs zero introduction, but's going to get one anyway. My friend, your friend. Actually, I don't know anybody who wouldn't be friends with this guy. Host of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast, all-around scholar and gentleman, Jason Connerly. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Oh, dude, you have an open invitation. Anytime you want to come on the union and, plunge a few toilets with me, I'm down.
Excellent.
You just have to ask. You just got to be like, hey, bro, let's double J, That should be our secret code word.
Double J. Yeah. Sounds like a truck stop.
It probably is, but I bet you it's a cool one. Yeah. So I've noticed underneath your arm there, you have a little box. And I'm just wondering, is that a box of recipes you got there? Or is that a box of something else?
Well, it's funny that you ask. I'm not sure. I guess we can let the cat out of the bag here. This is a box of dice. These are the Runehammer RPG dice, which were out of stock. I think they're back in stock now. I don't know if you've seen these. You can order them from the Runehammer shop, but they're going to play into what we're talking about today.
Sweet.
I will show them to you. What I like about them is when you get old and you can't see, then these big old dice.
Oh, damn.
Are really easy to see.
Yeah. Those are really super easy readable. To use. I love those, man.
Yeah. These are great dice. Like I say, you can get them off the Runehammer store. I don't know what his international shipping's like though. So that's something you'd have to see. These are, as you get older, all the funny dice lose their luster and you look for big ones, white or ivory or yellow with, black letters that are easy to read. But that's what these are. Yes.
No joke, man. I know even at my table, my ladies group all have like really fancy, pretty dice that they've gotten from different cons. And they have on occasion switched out which dice they're using because they're like, I don't know what the numbers are. And it's like, it's sad because they're really nice looking dice and I'm sure they spend a fortune for them. But to me, it's like, listen, man, especially in the heat of the moment when you're running a game, it's like, you ain't got no time to wonder, is that a 6 or a 9? And right. Sometimes a 20 looks like a 10.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. But I'm all about, I've got way too many dice and I'm all about collecting, funny dice and different dice and all, but these are the ones I tend to play with these days just because they're big and easy to read.
Yeah, for sure, man. So what I was actually alluding to was that I thought maybe you had like a box of index cards. I wasn't expecting you to pull out the big guns and get some dice, but that's pretty sweet nonetheless. So yeah, we decided we were going to talk a little bit about index RPG. You were telling me that this is like one of your favorite, systems, maybe in your top 10. I'm not sure.
Probably. I'm not a great person for doing rankings and things like that because they tend to change day to day. If you ask me to, what my absolute favorite movie is or my favorite game is, I it's going to change a little bit day to day, right?
That's fair.
But yeah, this is definitely pretty high up there. I So I got into Index Card RPG back, I don't know, probably like 2017, maybe 2018, maybe 2016 or 17, I'm thinking. I don't know. I'd have to look, see when it came out, but I want to say 16 or 17.
Okay.
And been kind of, you know, I played it a bunch, run it a bunch, and I keep coming back to it because it has all the different things that I really like, except one thing kind of makes it a little elusive for me. And that is that it's built. So when you think about like a lot of modern board games, like Fantasy Flight board games, I guess what maybe they're out of, I don't know. Did they go out of business anyway? But you know, if you think back 10 years ago when you had all these board games, or you have video games, and there's always the time pressure, and the idea is that, you know, you can't lag in the room and to search everything, you have to just, you know, you're under time pressure and you have to keep moving and all that. Well, ICRPG is built with that time pressure built into it. And it's designed to use that time pressure. And I fight against that a little bit. But the cool thing is, ICRPG is a toolbox. And even if you never actually fully play it, you can easily take bits and pieces out of it and use it to enhance your existing games. It's got one of the best game master guides, you know, of any RPG. It's got a ton of different things in the core system that simplify your game if you just want your game to go faster. And we can talk about some of those things, you know, tonight. But I think it's well worth picking up. And if you're not sure about it, you know, you can pick up the starter guide for free. And Hank Infernell, the man behind Runehammer, is a Runehammer video channel. It used to be Drunken Dragons or something like that.
Yep.
And from years and years ago. And you can watch those and you know, you can get a good feel for it watching the videos and checking it out. You know, and I've, you know, back a couple last year, I guess, when I went to ShireCon, I stopped in Philly and went to his shop and hung out and talked to him for a little while. And that was cool. I think there is something a little bit special.
Let me ask you a question before you get too far ahead. Did he know who you were?
No, he did not. I didn't, mind you, I didn't introduce myself. I was.
I bet you he would have known if you'd have been like, hey, do you ever listen to Nerds RPG Variety Cast? I'm that, yeah, Jason.
I just said Jason. Yeah, I didn't mention Nerds RPG Variety Cast. You know, I don't, because you know, if I had gone in and asked him for an interview or something, which probably I should have, because it was a pretty, you know, it was the store just opened and there, you know, it was kind of just a couple people in there. So I probably could have, but I'm not aggressive like that. I just kind of wanted to shake the guy's hand and say hi to him and thank him for his game, you know?
Sure, man.
That's kind of where my head was at that time, but you know, to the detriment of my listeners. But it's funny the timing of this, because just the other week on, I don't watch Eric Tenkar's show on YouTube very much, but I was going through one Friday night and I saw one of the guys holding up ICRPG character sheet. So I went back and listened, and on their like open talk episode that was on the 7th of November, they're sitting there about 50, 55 minutes into the episode. They do like this 10-minute talk about ICRPG. And it's interesting because like the one guy, Glenn Hallstrom had found it, was talking about it. And Eric Tenkar and the other guy that was on there weren't familiar with the game at all. And so he was like giving them the sales pitch and all this stuff. And it was funny watching these, you know, Grognards, OSR guys, like, oh, wow. You know, and that sounds cool. And that sounds neat. And, you know, kind of hearing that buy-in. This game is, you know, is not a OSR game. It's, you know, if you had to classify it, which I'm not big into classifying things, but it's a DIY game. It's, you know, you have all the tools in the game to run a game, don't get me wrong, but really it's meant for you to take and turn into your own thing.
Okay.
And so you're meant to build on it.
Okay. Yeah. So when you're saying DIY, you're not talking about like Hankrin DIY'd the game. You're talking about like you need to like pick and choose the pieces that you want to use, kind of like, you know, Savage Worlds or GURPS or something right. like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. And in fact, if you buy the Master Edition, the latest edition of ICRPG, it comes with five different settings in the game, right? It's got a fantasy setting, a sci-fi setting, a Weird West setting, a superhero setting, and a caveman setting. So, and then there's other things you could buy. There's a cyberpunk setting that's out there, Altered State, that I when that was in beta testing, I ran a campaign in. And there are some other ones out there. It's, you know, it's kind of cool. There's a Delta Greenish setting out there called Blacklight. So there's a number of things out there for the game that are interesting. But like I say, the neatest thing about it is if you watch his videos, you'll see kind of the creativity and positivity that the creator brings to the hobby. And we get this, you know, from the game too. So I think that's what brings me back to it. A large degree is the idea of this fast playing game that is easy, that you don't have to look up rules for, and you know, the positivity of the creator. And when I played it with people, we've always had fun playing it. To me, it's always been more of a one-shot game than a campaign game, although there's 100% a leveling up system and campaign. It's not class and level per se, but they're milestones. And okay. as you increase in power, you go up in you get different milestones, but pretty much instead of experience or whatever, in this game, you get loot, you get items.
I just wanted to like take a step back for a minute. Yeah. When you're talking about it's a fast game, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I'm just being obtuse, but mm-hmm. what do you mean by that exactly?
So we can look at, let's go back to, so this game is effectively stripped down 5e. It's more than that, but it started as house rules to 5e to make it faster and more nimble at the table, right?
Okay.
So when gotcha. We look at the characters, we don't roll tributes. It's a point generated system, but you don't have a tribute. The standard 6 attributes like in 5e, but instead of having a number score like 15 or 12 or whatever, you just had the bonus, you know, so like a +2 strength.
Right.
Or you might have a 0 strength. And then, you know, when you're trying to do something, you're rolling a d20 and you add your attribute to that. And if you have items, what they call loot, right? So maybe a sword gives you a +1 and you have +2 strength. Well, now you're adding +3 to your d20 when you're rolling to attack with a sword.
Okay.
So it's, you know, you're always in a turn sequence. And he's got a good video. I'll send you a link for sure. This.
I'll put that in the show notes.
But the always in turns doesn't mean that you can't table talk and you can't talk to each other or anything like that. But the idea is to keep the game moving, keep it going. So instead of doing initiative, you're sitting at the table, or if you're playing on like Zoom, you know, like we're meeting here, you just go around the different people on there. If you're using a VTT, you can just go along the bottom in the order the people or their names show up in the bottom, right?
Right.
And typically the GM would go last, but you just go in that order. And if you're playing in person, if you want to change the order you're acting in, you just change your seat. But right. By doing that, not rolling initiative each time and not thinking, where am I initiative order? Where's the new monster initiative order? It speeds things up. There are a lot of little things like that in there. It uses zones instead of, so instead of like, you can move 3 inches or you can move 5 feet, we use zones, right?
Right.
So we have near, far, that kind of thing. And you know, for measuring, if we're using miniatures and you watch his videos, there's a lot of videos of miniature building, crafting and stuff.
Okay.
But for movement ranges, use a banana. I mean, you don't have to literally use a banana, but you'll see that in the videos, you know, the idea of it, it's about a banana. That's about a near move. That's how far you can move.
This would explain why his dice boxes come with a free banana.
That's right.
So what you're saying sounds in a lot of ways kind of like what Kelsey did for Shadow Dark. Like I know that her and Hankerin Fernale were our friends, so it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, she borrowed these concepts from him.
Yeah, well, she was playing in his kind of personal group and his own group
cool
prior to years before that. So yeah, there's definitely that connection there. You know, one of the other things that speeds things up when you talk about difficulty numbers or target numbers, right? What this game does is it assigns one target number to the scene. So, and again, we're kind of think video game terms, right?
Right.
So you enter in the scene. The scene's target number is 12. So you have to roll 12 or higher to succeed. To hit the monster, you have to roll 12 or higher. To open the treasure chest, you have to open 12 or higher. To do whatever. Instead of using advantage, disadvantage, a roll can be easy or hard. a hard roll, you add 3 to the, so 12 will become a 15 target number. And if it's easy, you subtract 3. So you have a 9 target number. That's it. There's target numbers, difficulties. That's it. So, it, you know, a lot of simple concepts. And it seems like, oh, there can't be that much to it. But actually, you can do a lot with a little bit. And when you, like, say, if you watch room design stuff or you read through the book, you'll see that the last thing in the system I think is worth mentioning real quickly, and then I'll throw it back to you because I'm talking way too much, is the idea of effort, because this is kind of important. Instead of damage per se, this takes the place of that, but everything has effort. So real quickly, hit points, he does, again, we're talking video game, like inspiration. So hearts, one heart is 10 hit points, basically.
Right? Okay.
So a two heart creature has 20 hit points. Your characters all start typically with one heart, 10 hit points.
Okay.
But you have different kinds of effort. So when you roll you roll D20 to attack or D20 to attempt a task, whether it's attacking or opening a treasure chest or deciphering a book, whatever it is, right? And then if you succeed in that D20 roll, you're going to roll your effort. And depending what it is the kind of die you roll. If it's basic effort, if you're just using your bare hands or you don't have anything, you're just using your intellect, you're not using any tools or anything special, you're rolling a D4. If you're using a tool or a weapon, you're rolling a D6. Guns or D8, magic or energy weapons or D10. And then a D12 is what they call ultimate effort. And you typically would get that if you roll critical, or you might have special effects that allow you and add a D12 to your roll. Now you get points when you create your character to add to your effort categories. So maybe your character gets +2 to all their basic effort. So whenever you roll that D4, it's actually D4 +2.
Okay.
But that effort is applied across the board for any task you try to accomplish. So a goblin you're fighting might have one heart. So you have to effectively try and do 10 points of effort to defeat that goblin. A lock you're trying to pick might have a heart. So you're trying to do 10 points of effort to open that lock. Same thing in deciphering this ancient magic scroll. It might be, you know, 2 hearts. And then you have to do 20 points of effort to decipher that scroll. So the effort is kind of used across the board for now. There's, you can also do a single test to succeed against a task. You might do a standard. You just roll once. And if you succeed, you pass the test. But for any kind of long-term, harder thing like fighting something or something that is going to take a little more work than a single die roll, you would use this effort system for.
Like, and let's then say he has, I had a truck or something and I wanted to fix my truck or my spaceship, then I would, you know, put in a certain amount of effort. So after, like, you know, let's say it's a really badly destroyed, you know, car, it might take like three hearts of effort, basically.
Yep. So you'd have you have to accumulate 30 points of effort to finally fix it. And then this kind of, when you go in, like, there's mech rules and vehicle rules in here where they break them into pieces. They chunk them down. They break them into chunks. You know, so the wing will have this many hearts and you know, the cockpit will have that many hearts. And that's kind of how he simplifies that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
But I'll throw it to you. I've been talking a lot. Sorry.
No, man, that's very cool. So, I guess when you mentioned to me that this was like something that you were, you know, very like a huge fan of, I was kind of surprised because I know you have a wide variety of like games and things that you're into, but I always see you as like the AD&D guy. Like, how would you make the distinction between like, tonight's an AD&D night and tomorrow I'm feeling like index card RPG night? Like, what's the flavor difference? Like, to me, there feels like there has to be something where you're like, oh, I feel like this is index card RPG is the perfect system to do this kind of game, or, you know, I don't know if you're like following me.
Yeah. So it's interesting. A lot of that's going to depend on the group. So my ideal gaming situation, and there's a little bit of a sidestep, but it does come back to answering your question. My ideal gaming situation would be to have it could be the same group or two groups, but have like two game nights, right? And maybe that's two game nights a month or two game nights every 2 weeks. But one game, one of those nights is playing a long-term campaign.
Right.
And the other night is you're doing one shots and you're doing like short, maybe 2-3 month campaigns. And you're in that, that group is always rotating systems and GMs and stuff, where that long-term campaign for the, for 3 years, we're playing, you know, Wrath of the Righteous with Pathfinder 1A under the same DM. Right.
Right.
And to me, that's like the ideal gaming situation, because you're both getting that long-term play and you're getting the variety of checking out all these different games and systems, right, and rotating GMs and doing all that. So to me, ICRPG would definitely fit in that second group. Now I know people have done long-term games with it. It'll, you know, you can do it, but to me, it's more that, you know, 3 month campaign kind of game.
Gotcha.
You know, one shot to 3 month campaign kind of game. And I may be selling it short by that, but that's kind of where it falls in for me.
I mean, I don't think that you're wrong for feeling that way. It's kind of like, I kind of feel that way about like Mothership. You know, like Mothership is a really cool system. There's a lot of really cool things that I really, that are like very innovative, that I love about the community and the products that they put out and all that kind of stuff. But, and I mean, we played Carl and Matt and I and Matt's brother, we played like a long-term Mothership game for, I don't know how many months that we played for, but it just didn't feel like it was as fun as it was. It didn't feel like it was like a robust long-term campaign kind of thing. And I know, you know, there might be people out there that'll be like, Jason, you don't know what you're talking about. Clearly, you know, you're not running the game properly. And in my defense, I wasn't running it. Okay. It was Carl D. So put it on Carl. Okay, Carl, this is all your fault.
Yeah. I mean, this is a discussion we've had around the Black Hack on my show.
Right.
Where, you know, I was in a kind of, not really West Marches, but it was, you know, whoever showed up that day to play
right.
the game. It was black, but it was the Black Hack second edition. And that game ran for over a year. And we played that, and the characters, you know, went up through 10th level. And then once it hit 10th level, the GM had created this idea of, well, now you're a patron, and then you can, and there were different guilds you could link up with and do different things. Neat. But I mean, we had a lot of fun with that. And, you know, but if you look at the Black Hack, you might think, oh, this thing doesn't have any legs. And you'll hear Joe Richter, Fine Sightless, talk about, oh, that's not a long-term game and this and
yeah.
that. You know, and he'd play in that game. But I think there is, you know, enough there if you want to do it. You know, right. you might add to it. But even if you're running, like you're going to be running Mass Norlethotep, right?
Yep.
And you're going to be using Call Cthulhu and running that. But that's not to say you're not going to be adding your own stuff in there here and there, right? Like, I don't know. Are you using straight 7th edition or using Pulp Cthulhu? Are you?
No, I'm using straight 7th, and I added one book just for character creation for like backstories mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I intend to add in like, you know, scenario material, but as far as like rules and stuff like that, I only actually made one minor house rule to the game, and that was more for the sake of like, because I know that Masks are a very deadly campaign mm-hmm. and I'd like to keep those characters for as long as it's, you know, realistic. So I stole from, and now I'm forgetting his name, Matthew Dawkins from Red Moon Roleplaying. He does mm-hmm. An actual play, which is really, really awesome. And he uses a rule where you can, instead of pushing your roll, which basically pushing means you re-roll. And if you fail, then something really bad's going to happen. So instead of doing just like you can make a re-roll, basically, it's you got to spend a point of luck and then that luck will let you do a reroll, or right. you can spend a bunch of luck to like match up to like the amount that you're missing. Mm-hmm. So like, for instance, say you needed to get a 77, but you only got, I don't know, like a 74, you could spend 3 points of luck and then it would get you up to where you needed to be. And then that luck is kind of burned. And then I have a thing where you can basically, at the beginning of every session, I let the players roll a D10 and add that. So it encourages them to kind of like spend their luck more freely, but hopefully also, you know, will like allow them to be a little bit more successful. Cause I looked at the pulp rules and stuff like that, and I thought it was kind of cool, but I was like, you know, there's something about the simplicity of the Call of Cthulhu rules that I preferred. And I was like, I don't want to mess around with it too much. So I'm just going to make a minor adjustment.
Right.
But yeah, now we're going like way off track.
No, that's fine. But it's interesting because, you know, part of this is talk about game mastering, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, those are decisions you made as a game master to try to make your game a little more survivable.
Right.
Right. And with ICRPG, it's interesting because you've got, you know, this system that is perfectly workable, but he tells you to, hey, take this, do what you want with it, use what you like. If you want to change something, you know, you can adjust it. This is built around his preferred style of play, but that doesn't mean you have to play that way. Right. So,
but this kind of, that kind of brings up something. So, I mean, we hear about this all the time, right? About, I don't know how many rule books have this in it, but it's like, this is your game now. Do whatever you need to do to make this game your game. And yet, I don't know how many times I've heard people get flack from other game masters or other people mm-hmm. about like, what are you doing? That's not how you're supposed to do it. That's not what the rules say. And somehow it's almost like people have to say it like, hey, man, this is yours now. There's no gaming police. Nobody's going to come at like, but it's almost like it's obligatory and there's like, you know, there's people like, yeah, you can change it, but you should be playing it straight up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in this case, actually he really means it. So unlike some of those, which, yeah, I know what you're saying, but I think in this case, really, he's, whether you play his game or whether you use it for the game master advice or whether you're picking pieces, you know, he just wants everybody fun. And the good thing about Ankeren is he stays positive and he's not
right.
putting up videos, taking down other games and arguing about it. I mean, in fact, his latest, he just put up a video on room design on the 10th of November. And it's really kind of, and the mechanics he's using the room design video or 5e, it's the D&D 2024.
Okay.
Rule mechanics is what he's using. Now, you could easily use that room design ideas in any system, right? But those just happen to be the mechanic he's showing. So it's not like he's only pushing his own products or putting other products, you know, saying buy this instead of D&D. That's not what he's about, right?
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that, you know, I've supported on Patreon and kind of really like Ankeren because he brings that more positive influence to our hobby, which I think is important.
Yeah, no, I agree. We definitely need the positivity. That's why I like listening to your show, Jason, because you bring the positivity.
Usually, yeah.
Not like
I try to. Yeah.
That Joe Richter guy that you have on sometimes.
Yeah, he.
I'm kidding, Joe.
All you have to do is mention the Crow reboot, and it's off to races with Joe.
Oh yeah. Man!
But like we talk about GM stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you know, and when you look at the three T's, and this is, you know, basic ICRPG stuff.
Yep.
Timers, threats, and treats.
Gotcha.
And these are essential to, and again, it's part of that, you know, keep things moving, keep them going fast. But timers, you know, once your scene starts, once you go into initiative, once you're in combat, right? Roll D4, whatever that number, you know, you roll a two. Well, in two rounds, something's going to happen. And now you as a GM have to know what's going to happen, right?
Right.
But seeing that and seeing that tick down and then having that happen, and then, you know, that keeps your players moving, you know, gives that sense of urgency, what's going on. And that might be, you know, maybe you're going to have lava splashing out from that hole on the side of the wall there. Or it might be that every two rounds is when that monster gets to a power attack or something. Who knows? You know, you have to decide for that particular scenario. But that's kind of what the idea of the timer is.
You know, and then I really like that. I wish that I would have. So in my Call of Cthulhu game that we're running now, they're on a side quest. And one of the things they had to do was go into the these tunnels underneath Antwerp to find a wizard's laboratory that was supposedly hidden somewhere down there. And they had a guide, and the guide led them into an ambush of ghouls. And these ghouls have been living down there for, you know, centuries. Mm-hmm. And my players decided to like hunker down in the corner and basically like, okay, we're not moving. They're going to come to us. I mean, it was a very good tactical decision. And I was a little bit stumped at that point. I was like, okay, so how do I do this now to like make this interesting without punishing right. them? And I mean, eventually, like, you know, we got through the scene and it was a little awkward. It didn't go as smoothly as I would have liked it to, but in the end it all worked out. But I think had I been thinking about those timers, that probably would have changed it. And if the players would have been like, okay, crap, we need to do something, because if we don't, then this is going to happen.
Because maybe, I mean, Antwerp, I don't know how stable geologically is, depending where you're at, but you could have tremors happen, yep. You know, maybe an earthquake, and it carries that to roll, where they're going to fall down. Everybody in the scene might have to roll to see if they fall down or stay on their feet, or you might have more ghouls showing up, or you might.
Exactly.
You know, or maybe at that point, the wizard does something, right?
Yep.
So, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, so I like that idea. That's very, very cool. And it's like you said, it applies not just to like, you know, index card RPG, but it can like go to anything, right?
Yeah, so, you can use that in any game, you know.
All right, so what's the next T?
The next T are threats.
All right.
And I'm just going to read right out of the book here. This is the easy part. Every room has a monster, trap, fireball, or some kind of damage door set to kill, eat, or capture helpless victims. Keep your GM notes simple by listing threat, bugbear, spikes, and the rest can live in your doodle map or be improvised at your table. And this is just the idea to have, you know, something out there and have an idea for the rooms and the threats. In this case, it would have been the ghouls in your case, right? They would have been that threat. And then the third one are treats. You always want to have something the players can use, whether these are literal video game style treasure chests where they can pick things up, or they're pieces of the scenery they can use, you know, to their advantage. You know, maybe just having that cart there in the corner, and if they're smart enough, they can pick up that cart and ram it into something, or they have
you know
they're just things in the room they can improvise and make use of. Or it could be actual, you know, well, if you have a chance to search over there, you'll find the healing potion hidden there, but do you want to take time to do that when you're fighting, and you know, those kind of things. But there's all kinds of things you can do there. But the big thing is, you don't want it just to be a static, oh, we're in this open room against monsters. We want to make fights interesting and fun. And having, you know, different things in the room you can use and leverage to your advantage. You know, what's that lever over there? Well, we'll pull it and find out. It might be good, might be bad, but it might, depending if maybe it's good, because if it opens up that trap door, well, if you can maneuver the bad guy, you know, the enemy on the trap door, then you can pull the lever and then fall down the chute. Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So nice. That's kind of that idea, but there's all kinds of little things like that in here that you could easily pick out. You know, there's a lot of, he puts a number of pages towards encounter architecture, talk about different, you know, room design and thing is a big part of it. And there are a number of pages of that in here. There's just a lot in here that's pretty useful for any game. Nice. You know, you can use pretty much across the board. This is one of those games. It's, I don't always like the super fast paced, and you know, we're going to, like in this one, like I say, you're always in turn order. So combat, obviously, or encounters, you know, that's easy. We're all used to what that looks like. and that's moments, right? And then you might also have things that are happening in minutes. And then you have, well, hold on, let me not give it to you wrong here. Let me find it in here. But yeah, basically you have you have moments, which is what you're doing in combat. You have minutes, which is what you're doing. Oh, okay. So in here they have, he has it as turn, round, and free form. And I've heard him say it different ways, which is why I got in the moments, minutes thing. But a turn is what you're doing in combat, right? It's a few moments. A round is once everybody takes that turn. But when you're at a combat, you that might be minutes. Where, and the idea is, you know, what can you do in a minute or two? So it's those times when you're maybe searching the room, you don't have monsters in the room, so you're not moment to moment, but you know, it's still not longer term. And then the other be free form, which you could be hours or days, like you're downtown, you're in the village, so you're gonna be here for 2 days. Well, we don't want to play out all that time, so everybody can right. do X number of actions. And right. that's where that, and then you'll go around, but you'll stay in that initiative order. You can talk to each other and all that, you know, obviously, but you're going to go, okay, so what are you doing? Okay, you're crafting. What are you doing? Oh, you're going to go try to haggle goods out of this guy. What are you doing? You're going to go try to find information. Okay. And, you know, and you kind of go around and then you move on to,
right.
to your mission. So.
Oh man, that's pretty rad. I like it. Yeah. Anything so, else?
I mean, there's a ton of stuff here and in his things. He's got a number of different things you can buy. If you go to the store, he's got cool maps and things. They have you can go to drive through.
Yeah, is that the Think Deck that he has?
Yeah, they have the Think Deck there. He has a number of things on drive through like that. And those are pretty much just things to spur your imagination.
Okay. Right?
So you would like take that Think Deck because it's art. And, okay. and you would. You know, so it's kind of like the same thing as those cubes, the Rory's Story cubes.
Yep.
It's the same idea as that, where you take that Think Deck, you know, draw out 3 cards, 5 cards. How do these go together? Okay, this is the adventure I'm going to run tonight, or this is right. what's happening. That's kind of the idea there. It's just to help spur your imagination.
Interesting. Very cool. Very cool.
So there's a lot of cool stuff. Like I said, I would recommend go check out his YouTube channel. That's free, other than taking a little bit of your time and you pretty easily. There's a whole series on the YouTube channel for like learning ICRPG and what is ICRPG. So that's like where to go, right?
Okay.
And start there. I'll send you that playlist, I guess, and you can maybe put that in there.
Sure. Has he started making videos again recently?
Where, yeah, well, like was say, he just put one out on the 10th of November. So
Because I imagine, I felt like he had stopped for a little bit while obviously he had big changes. He had opened up the store and I think he had moved to Philly or he had, was
yeah,
already
he moved,
there.
Yeah, he moved. Yeah, because he was in Seattle. Well, or at least Washington State. And, okay. and the, yeah, he moved to Philly and opened the store up. And he's been obviously busy with that. But, and it's funny, and he does monologue. Like if you go through that YouTube channel, not all of them are gameplay related things. Some of them are where he's answering questions, kind of talking right. about his journey. And, you know, he's going through that same journey, trying to not be, you know, just always stuck on social media and all that. He, you know, goes out, you know, you want to exercise and now he has a shop. He's playing more in person than online. And, you know, and I think it's a good point. I think some, you know, a lot of us spend much more time online than probably we should. Where we could be interacting otherwise, right?
Facts,
or doing other activities than being online. And there's actually a Discord that, you know, is open to anybody. And, you know, he'll post out thoughts there. And he actually just put one out Saturday morning where he was talking about his, you know, he just finished up this 6-week like training and like mental clarity thing that he was doing and talking about how, the, you know, the idea of the difference in when you achieve something with out in the world or like sports where you have a concrete goal or a concrete thing compared to like with games, like especially role-playing games where it's not as concrete, like you're there having fun and, you know, some games you're going to win, you're going to lose, but it's not the same as like, if you do a football game, you know, one team's you might have a tie, but you,
right.
You know what I mean? It's not the same.
That's a, and, that's and balancing really interesting.
Those things in your life, right? So,
Yeah. I never really thought about it. Sorry to interrupt you, but
no,
I just,
you're good.
To me, I, you know, one of the reasons why I like playing role-playing games is because you're not competitive, right? Like I'm not, mm-hmm. as a game master, I'm not trying to like beat my players. Although I feel like in old school D&D, like maybe back in the day, there was more of that adversarial kind of concept. I guess, you know, in some level that's kind of gone out of fashion. And it's the same reason why I like playing Commander in Magic is because to me, it's a casual hangout with your friends. You know, mm-hmm. you're not super concerned about winning the games, but I think there is something to be said about not having, you know, sort of like defined parameters of like, were we successful tonight beyond just did everybody have fun? Right.
Right.
Because I don't know about how you feel, but there's so many times, and this is a personal thing that I've been trying to work on myself, is that sense of like, oh man, that wasn't a good game. Like I didn't feel like it was a good game. I didn't feel like I did enough as a game master. You know, whether that I didn't do enough prep or I didn't run the game properly because I forgot something, or I forgot a rule, or I forgot to tell the players something that really important that they would have like completely changed how they would have perceived the scenario. And, you know, like my players tell me all the time, like, oh, dude, you do a great job. We have a lot of fun. Stop talking mm-hmm. like that. And I try. And I feel like I have succeeded on some level of that. But, yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it, you know, I think there's, it's interesting because, you know, we get games like third edition and 3.5 that we're going to codify everything because, you know, potentially adversarial play or this or that, or, you know, it's not, you know, this is going to be better for the players and all that. But I kind of wonder with, and there's a little bit of tangent, but I wonder once you do that, you know, having played Pathfinder, which is a extension of that system effectively, right?
Yeah.
Like it, now we're 100% make it okay for the GM to go after the players because it's all right. It's all codified in the rules, right? And so I don't know that. So it helps having everything codified like that helps that the GM's not making it up as they go to attack the players, right? But, you know, of course he does this and just making abilities up or hiding things, you know, because it's all in the open to some degree. But at the same time, because it codifies it, it almost makes it, well, it's okay for to go open season on the players, right?
Right.
And get that, like, you know, head-to-head combat thing going on to some degree when you're doing that. Okay, because effectively we made our little mini skirmish game. We bought the armies. We have equal number of points. Right.
Yep.
Because we have our combat rating or whatever. And so now you can go all out. And so it's interesting that I don't know that it really helped the idea of adversarial play to move into the 3.x sphere.
Well,
I think other games nowadays do much better at that kind of thing.
Yeah.
To be fair. Yeah.
But I mean, I think one of the original design goals and like, you know, I'm not 100% sure of this, so don't quote me on it, but I feel like when they were talking, you know, because when you talk about like the different versions of D&D, right? And mm-hmm. we had talked about this before, I think we were talking off camera the last time about, you know, so you got your OD&D and your, you know, your BX and Holmes and Moldvay and Cook and, you know, all of the variations of like D&D up until you get to 3E, right? And everybody was kind of playing the game differently depending on mm-hmm. what group you were in. I mean, you could be in the same state and you'd be playing it differently,
right?
To a certain degree, because mm-hmm. everybody had sort of like interpreted the rules in a bizarre way, thinking, oh, this must be what they're trying to say. Right.
Right.
And I think that's what 3E was trying to get past, was basically like, okay, here is a definitive set of rules so that you know, you are all, we're all, it doesn't matter if you came from like Los Angeles and you're playing with somebody in, you know, Miami and you're playing with somebody in Maine, like you guys are all playing the same game and, you know, you, the rules are all the same. And then this, I think they took it a step further and was like, okay, so like, why are there separate rules for like game masters versus players? And so now everybody's on the same playing field, and that we need to have a rule so that everybody, like you said, nobody's cheating. We're all, mm-hmm. we're all playing the same game. I think in retrospect, as much as I think that was a good concept, that kind of works against the game for, because in some ways it takes the power away from the game master, because now you just have players saying, well, no, dude, I'm supposed to have like this much treasure. I'm supposed to have this much magic items. You know, these encounters can only be this powerful. Why are you sending super powerful things against us? It doesn't make any sense. And it, you know, it puts the power in the player's hands, which seems weird. I mean, if you're talking about going from one side of the pendulum to the other in that respect. So like, I like the idea of like, well, yeah, the reason why the tools for the game masters are different is because you got two different kind of, you know, goals that are going on, right? Players want to have crunch. Players, or not necessarily all players, but generally speaking, you've got a subset of players who they want to have options. They want to have tools that they can use to like beat stuff up with and do cool things at cool items. Whereas like a game master, it's like, listen, man, you know, you got, it's 4-1. Sometimes it's like 10-1 if you're like a psycho and you play in a huge group like that. And it's like, dude, I got one brain, man. I don't got the power to like be able to deal with 10 people all thinking like, hey guys, what if we did this? And then we did that. And you got that one guy who comes up with a super crazy plan and you're like, damn it, that plan's so good. There's no reason why it shouldn't work. And you're like, okay, well now my entire encounter is like sunk because of this.
Right. But no, I think it's, that's, oh, go ahead. I'll let you finish your thought.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, now we've really gone into, like, left field. Yeah. But
No, it's interesting. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I definitely think having these different editions and different way to approach it gives us learning points for what worked and didn't work over the years. And game designers today can benefit from all that.
Definitely.
So I think that, you know, and that's not saying new games are better than old games, you know, but it's just saying that now we have 50 years of experience, 50 years to look back on. And so it's a lot easier. And let's be fair, it's a lot easier now, 50 years later, to look back over everything and say, yeah, that worked, that didn't work. Where when they're, you know, when WotC took over D&D, when they absorbed TSR, right, and they're making their new edition, hey, you know, it really had been, yeah, all those games from OD&D to 2E had all, they were different, but at the same time, they all kind of worked together to some degree.
Yeah.
They all had a lot of the basic thing. So now we're kind of recreating this, doing our thing. Well, you know, and you had experienced game designers in there, and there were other games on the market that they looked at. But, you know, that was, you know, they're, you know, you have to trial and error, right? And see what works and what doesn't. And they came out with a system that a lot of people love. It was successful. And we still see it being played today, and especially in the Pathfinder 1E space, right? So, not that people aren't playing 3.5 these days, but I think probably Pathfinder 1E is the most played version of the 3X system still out, 3.X system still out there, right?
That kind of makes me wonder too, though. You know, like had D&D not gone in the direction of like 4E, mm-hmm. and that the fourth edition wasn't such a radical departure from what third edition was, and then Pathfinder was never created, would there be more people playing third edition? Like, I'm just going on the, like, I don't have statistics. I don't know. Who knows? There could be a you know, metric shit ton of people that are playing, you know, third edition, and we don't know. But my gut feeling is that, it, you know, the people are probably, you know, playing with Pathfinder because it's, mm-hmm. you know, to some degree, it's like a living game still, right? Even though the second edition is out. But you know what? I feel like this was a really interesting discussion on index card RPG. I know we could probably talk a lot more about like game designs and stuff like that, but I feel like because we've gone so far off the path, it's time to sort of bring it around to a new topic. Just to finish out before we finish out the show today. So on your show, you've already announced it because your show comes out a day before mine, but we are doing a contest together, and the question of the contest is, if you could only play games from one company for the rest of your life, what company would it be? And so Jason and I are going to get back together, and we are going to give our answers to this very tough question. But we would like you guys to send in your submissions by December 19th, 2025. And we will announce the winner on December 28th, 2025. And at the same time, give our answers. And we will be drawing two winners, right? Are we doing two mm-hmm. winners, or we're going to do one winner?
No, we'll draw two winners.
Okay.
The way that works, the way I've always done my contests in the past, you know, everybody can send their submissions in. They can send them in any way. You can submit a message to Jason, or any way you can submit a message to me in the show notes of my show, which would be, you know, SpeakPipe accounts. You can send us messages on Discord. We have emails to the show. You could send a text email, or you can send an audio file. And if it's a text message, one of us will read it on the air. If it's audio file of some sort, we'll play that message. So all the entries will be played or read, and then we'll roll randomly to pick two winners. We're not going to actually judge and say this is the best entry, but we're just going to randomly select two of the entries to be winners.
But let's be honest, deep in my heart, I'm going to be judging each and every one of you. And, so you make sure your answers are good answers, because if they suck, I may just minus you off the table of rolling. I'd be like, oh, D20 table. How about we're going to roll a D8? I'm just kidding. I am kidding. Send in. Listen, I don't care how ridiculous your answers are. I want to hear from you. And I know Jason Connerly wants to hear from you. So you dude. OK, yeah. So here's the thing. My speak pipe. I do have messages and stuff like that, and I'm going to play some of my messages, but I would like to, I feel like I've done a little bit of a disservice to my fans. And if I can say that I have fans, it sounds weird to say that now that I say that out loud, but people who listen to this show, I need to do a little bit more talky episodes and less interviews. It's been a lot of fun doing them, and I will continue to do them. But so send me your feedback via SpeakPipe or, you know, audio messages on the Discord. You can go to the Dungeon Plunger Union Discord. You could go to the Audio Dungeon Discord, or, you know, those are the ones that I hang out at. You could send me an email at dungeonplunger@gmail.com. That only gets junk mail. I never get cool stuff in my Gmail. Do you get emails, Jay?
I do.
Yep. Do you get good stuff in your email?
Yeah, every now and then. In fact, I've got I'll declare that on my show.
Okay.
Here to future episode. But no, yeah, I do occasionally.
Listen, yeah. I feel a little less of a man.
I've been doing this, you know, like 5 years longer than you too. So
yeah, I've been asking for people to send emails and people just don't. So, you know, who knows? We'll see. Maybe that'll change. So yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up. Send in your, so I'll repeat that. If you can only play games for one company for the rest of your life, which company would it be? Send us in your response, and we will make you famous by playing your response on the shows.
And the important thing is, which one would it be and why? Why did you pick? So if Runehammer Games is the one company, for example, we talk about ICRPG in this episode, and that might be somebody's only game, and Runehammer with the different settings and all might be their only game company. Let's say that was your pick. Tell us why you picked those Runehammer as your company, right?
I like it. Give us something to talk about, you know? Mm-hmm. So is there anything else that I missed, Jason, that we should say before we close out this sucker?
I don't think so, Jason. I think you've covered it quite well.
Awesome, dude. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Where can people find you?
They can find me at the Nerds RPG Variety Cast at all the normal places you would find podcasts, except on YouTube, which it's not on YouTube. And you can find me if you're on Discord in the Audio Dungeon Discord channel. You can find me there. You can find me in a bunch of Discord channels, including this little known Discord channel called the Dungeon Plungers Union. I'm in a bunch of different Discord channels. Sweet. All is, you know, Jason, Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I shouldn't be too hard to find.
All right. I'm even going to have a link here for your blog. You still update blog?
It's still up there, but yeah, it's fallen by the wayside, unfortunately. But all my contact information is on the blog. So yeah, they can go there, at least find my contact information.
All right. Give Jason's blog some love. Give his, send him messages. Feel free to send him stuff to his email. What's your email address?
NerdsRPGVarietyCast@gmail.com.
That's a good email address for you. I approve. All right. Well, thanks for plunging the dungeon, Jason. And I feel like we've flushed evil down the drain pretty good this week. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. Plungers up.
Plungers up. Up,
isn't it? Yeah.
Now we'll put whatever up you want.
Just, I'm just a yank, so you have to forgive
me. I love you guys, man. I love you guys. Go ahead.
What we didn't mention, what got left out now that I think about it, we're talking about the contest. So we said we would draw two winners for the contest. Winners will receive, each will receive a $25 DriveThruRPG gift certificate. Or if they're in the U.S. and they want something out of my gaming collection, I'll happily send them something out of my gaming collection. And if they're in Canada, then Jason will send them something out of his gaming collection.
Yes. And you know what? Since I'll have to mail something if that happens, I will actually send you a real Dungeon Plunger Union card membership, because I've always wanted to have those. And so I feel like if there was ever a time to send one out, that would be the time to do it. Cool. So, man, plungers up. And until next time, chill. I don't know. That was my ending's all messed up now, but that's okay. We're going to use the power of editing to make this episode end on a bang.
That's all for this week, folks. Music and stingers by Reed Reimer of Fable Factory Studio. Cover art by John McNally. And a special thanks to Edward Vallee, the voice of Hector.
Greetings, listener. This is I, Hector, the real Dungeon Plunger. Not that milk drinker Jason. We in the dungeon always appreciate whatever love you can give us. So please, share the podcast, send your messages, and do anything that will unclog our algorithm. We really appreciate it. Plungers up! Ah! 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 Ah!
And remember, when you're plunging in the dungeon and nature calls, watch out for mimics disguised as toilets. They're a pain in the butt.